we're talking a little bit about the Giants. Now, this morning when you got here, I asked you what you had been doing the previous couple of days, and you said you were over at Giants camp.
Yeah.
And Giant fans are going to love to hear this, because the way that you were talking about what you saw in person, and I'm not talking about quarterbacks now, I'm not talking about anything else. I'm just talking about the team as a whole, whether it be offensive line, defensive line, the way that it looked on the field. You felt like this is going to be a much better team than people think.
Yeah, I'm excited for the Giants and what they have. You know, I look at their roster now, and, you know, that's kind of what we do right this time of year. We just got to look at but many impact players on the team. And I was standing next to the one group who I think is the big key to the team. That's Brian Burns, Abdul Carter, Kayvon Thibodeau, and Dexter Lawrence.
Yes.
So I'm standing there, and, you know, I just like, God, I feel so small. But I couldn't get over the size of all of them. You know, Brian Burns looks long and kind of trim to be a defensive end or outside linebacker, whatever you call it. Man, he is a man when you see him in person. And there's a good shot of Abdul Carter. Look how much, Boomer, that's what caught me by surprise, how much, there you go. Wow,
how was that? The inside move. So we're watching some of the highlights on CBS Sports Network, and he's got these quick moves that, you know, he can actually come around the corner like a Myles Garrett. He can come around the corner like a Bruce Smith when we played, and like LT.
Yes. Well, you know, there's a play, and I know a lot of people are listening on radio, and the tackle's worried about the speed outside, and he just one step outside underneath, he's free to the quarterback, and it's so, you know, I saw them together, and you could tell Coach Daboll was there with them. And they were all yelling at him, kind of like, oh, you do everything for the offense. You practice. And that was great, too. So I think that I know it's a quick look at it, but just the camaraderie that this defensive line is going to have. And they're a huge, probably the most important part of the team, to be honest.
Well,
They need that defensive line to be dominant.
Well, listen, think about the quarterbacks they're playing against. Think about their division. Think about Jalen Hurts, Jaden Daniels, Dak Prescott. What do you need? You got to have speed on the outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, these guys, especially Abdul Carter, I think it's an unbelievable pick for the Giants. And I was happy that Joe Shane got a chance to do it again. To me, I go back to Mr. Mara and the fact that, you know, he's trying to get it right. He's spent a lot of money over the last 10 years. They've made a lot of mistakes. They made it tough on Daniel Jones for a lot of different reasons. They weren't settled on coaching. They weren't settled on GMs. And I feel like they got their quarterback that they finally drafted. They've kind of culled the roster to get rid of some of the guys that they didn't want here anymore. And now all of a sudden comes in this youth and energy of a Jackson Dart and an Abdul Carter, the two of those guys alone. Well, could change the fortunes of this franchise.
Yeah, I know I'm talking nothing but very positive about the Giants. And, of course, you know, I hate to say it, I'm a Giant fan. I follow them very closely during the season. I watch the games on TV or even on, you know, coaches'
films. You go to the games, too.
Well, I don't go to the game.
Yeah, I thought you went to the games to say hi to everybody.
No.
You know, I don't use you for that?
I mean,
you're a legend.
Yeah, okay, stop it.
All right. I just want to make sure that you know I know who you are.
But you're saying it to be, you know, a jackass.
No, I'm not saying it to be a jackass. I'm saying it to be...
It's all good. Yeah, well, the opening game of the year, you know, it was 100-year anniversary for the Giants. So last year, I think we got one this year where we're going to go there, and there's going to be, I hope I'm right, bobblehead dolls.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well.
Oh, I can't wait to get a Phil Simms bobblehead.
Oh, well, what was yours look like?
We got one in here somewhere.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's around here.
Oh, there it is.
Over there in the corner, yes.
That's a pretty good replica of your head.
Yeah, it's a bobblehead.
It's a bobblehead.
Yes,
okay.
And yours will look good as well. So when you talk to Brian Daboll, do you sense any nervousness about?
No.
None at all?
No.
Does he have the realization that this could...
Well, I'm sure, he's a human being. Of course he thinks about it. And I'm sure Joe Shane, they're thinking about that. How can you not? It's like being a quarterback and knowing you got to go out and do this really well, have a winning, whatever it is, to keep your job. It's a constant fight. And the coaches, they're under pressure, but you sure don't feel it. And it's the second year for the defensive coordinator, Shane Bowen, so that's a big deal. And I just think the team is better this year than last year. And like I said, I think the defensive line And the other big story is Andrew Thomas, of course, at left tackle. I heard you guys talking about it. It's amazing. One offensive lineman could be the difference between having a solid year and having it fall apart.
You know, I had a Hall of Fame offensive lineman by the name of Anthony Munoz. You know that?
Oh, sure.
And Anthony was an incredible player, and all the other players were great players too. But he just made everything easier. Like you didn't have to worry about the right side of the defense when you have a left tackle like that.
Yeah, that's right.
And for you, that would have been your backside. For me, it was my front side.
Right.
So my right tackle, who was Joe Walters, he was great too. He was big, he was mammoth, and he could pass block his ass off. So I never really have to worry about any of that stuff. And you got to hope that this starting offensive line, do you think that this could be also, like, when I think of the Eagles, I think best defensive line, best offensive line in football.
Yeah.
Combination, boom. Put great athletes on the field with them. Now all of a sudden those great athletes can make plays unencumbered because they're not worried about getting hit, whether it be a defensive back or whether it be a wide receiver. It could be Saquon Barkley. It could be Cooper DeJean. Those are the athletes on the field that are making plays because of the two offensive and defensive line combinations.
Well, you and I do a show. We talked all season long. I think, was that every Friday we did that?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Balance of Nature, Pigs.
But that was on Wednesdays.
Oh, that was on Wednesdays.
But we did a show on Fridays, and I think when the playoffs always get near, I say, look at the playoff teams, and if you judge the offensive lines in the whole NFL from 1 to 32 – it's amazing they're all in that playoff group, you know, the high ones.
Right.
And that's what we saw. Philadelphia, wow. Maybe one of the best offensive lines in history last year.
You know, CBSSports.com, did one of these, top 25 teams over the last 25 years in the NFL.
Okay.
The number one team on that list was last year's Philadelphia Eagles Super Bowl winning team.
I'm not going to disagree.
There's about five or six Patriot teams in there as well.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of teams that did not win Super Bowls that were in there that unfortunately got knocked off in the playoffs for whatever reason. But to your point, when you think about what the Philadelphia Eagles were last year and you think about every single position and how that position was filled by the players that Howie Roseman put there. And by the way, he's called that team again and he's rebuilt that team again.
Yeah. Listen, Boomer, it's they didn't have to do anything on defense or offense to be clever. It was meat and potatoes, big guy, everything. The offense, I knew every play. We talked about it so much last year. I would just know the play. Oh, the outside receiver is going under, the slot receiver out. They run it like 10 times a game. Oh, they had like five plays that they just beat you over the head with every single game because of their talent. Jalen Hurts. He throws basically every football towards the sideline. Why throw it over the middle? That's where the trouble is. And so they had so many plays designed to get it outside the numbers. And I think in the championship game, the Super Bowl, I don't know if he threw any over the middle. And it just shows you how they just simplified everything they were doing because of the great talent they had.
Yeah, but their defense shut down Patrick Mahomes and that offense. Yeah. And Travis Kelce was non-existent for whatever reason in that game. It's interesting. You and I and Gio did the Philadelphia at Giant game last year for Compass Media Networks. And Josh Izudu, I remember, was having a hell of a time. He was having a hell of a time. And if you remember, Gio was telling us he was on the sideline.
Getting pumped up.
And they were trying to pump him up because he just didn't belong out there on the field. And again, it goes back to defensive line versus offensive line and the competitiveness of each of these players. And for whatever reason, Howie Roseman loves that University of Georgia defense.
Well, there's a good reason. Guys. They're very, very good.
He got a little break here and there, with a couple players that had fell to him in the draft, and he selected them, even though they had a few marks against them off the field.
Right.
But it's turned out to be, a winning formula for them.
Well, and who did he sign for that offensive line? Mekhi Becton. How did Mekhi Becton play last year?
Well, it was interesting. I'm going to ask you, it was interesting because they signed him, but then they let him go.
1 year deal.
Right.
They had to let a lot of people go or a few people because it's about money. So Mekhi Becton ends up with the Chargers. And all of a sudden you look at the Chargers and go, it's an unbelievable offensive line.
But I felt like Mekhi Becton had a lot to prove.
Yes, he did.
And he went to the right group. That offensive line is a very solid group there. We know even with Travis, Jason Kelce retiring,
right,
it still was a very solid group. And they got a great offensive line coach.
Yeah, he does. And so you and I were sitting there doing the game on radio, and I remember just going, oh, my gosh. It's the center pulled out to the left side, and Saquon followed him, and he ran for that long touchdown.
And there was nobody out there.
And it was incredible, though, just to see the fact, the athletic ability of their whole offensive line, but for the center, too, who's replacing probably a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, and that was Kelce.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
And Jason Kelce. And the other thing, too, just one thing before we take a break here, is I was thinking about, you know, the giant offensive line now. If Andrew Thomas is healthy, with this defensive line that they have, where would you put them? Are they a top 10 combination unit?
No.
They're not.
No, I don't think so.
Their offensive line is still a little bit shaky.
I'm not shaky, but I think we'll see how it works out. I think they need a few players to play better this year than they did last year. But yeah, if they get whatever, 15, whatever, however you want to put it out there, they just need they need great improvement on the offensive line. The first thing always is being healthy. I'll never forget Tom Coughlin said once he had Tony Boselli was his left tackle.
Down in Jacksonville, yes.
Yeah, in Jacksonville. You remember Derek Thomas had the 7 sacks?
Yes.
The week before I'm doing
Kansas
the game?
City, yes.
And I said to him, so what are you going to do? You're going to double team Derek Thomas? And he got stood up and goes, what do you mean? I'm going to put our guy out there against their guy, and let's see who wins. And the coach, I was just asking a question, man, you know. But so we do the game. Tony Boselli dominated him every play. And you had one of those, too.
That's what I'm saying. So Andrew Thomas is that key,
man,
without question.
Do that in a minute. 3RQ, next segment. So Hoff will ask the questions instead of Sal. Hopefully they're as good. Sure they are. Susan Waldman's going to join me at 1. That'll be fun. And a little football note here. So first on the Giants, obviously the Jets and the Giants are in camp. Just like that, bang. I mean, it's amazing. You know, it feels like yesterday was Memorial Day, summer just starting, 4th of July, you know, before you know it, Labor Day. And here we are. We're already getting bombarded with the social media clips and the over-analyzing of 7-on-7s and no pads. But hey, it's at least until there's real football, it's the earliest version of football, which is good by me, and I know good by you. Now, here's what Dable said. No surprise with the Russell Wilson start. Russell Wilson news anointed him the unquestioned starter. He's the guy. What he did say, and I don't think this is incredibly surprising, but it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out, that there's an open competition for the number 2 spot between Jameis Winston and Jackson Dart. Now, and I did think, and I saw this quick, that I think I saw Jackson Dart throw a pick on his first attempt. I think, and I don't know if it was a red zone pick. It was? Was it red zone? Was it a pick 6? I thought it was a pick 6. Oh, God. You drafted the wrong guy. God. I would say threw 2? Okay, I got you. Yeah, he did throw a sloppy one early. Whatever. I like him. I like that the fact that the Giants went out there, were aggressive, and they got him. Now, how this plays out, I have no idea. I can promise you that the guy that he's battling the number 2 spot for in camp, he's going to throw a few picks as well, because that's what he always does, Jameis Winston. Now, what I think is really interesting, and this is the line that the Giants are going to have to straddle, and I don't think it's that easy. All right. Now, I think what you get from Russell Wilson this year is pretty much what you got last year. You know, still pretty good deep thrower, not the athlete he used to be, smart, tough, good leader. I think that he'll do, not great, but I think he'll be definitely functional, definitely viable. All right? I think Russell Wilson's probably going to hold on to the starting job for a while. Maybe the whole season. You know, not a 30-touchdown guy, but just decent quarterback play. Not great enough to say, wow, this is amazing. And certainly not bad enough to say, geez, all right, after 3 weeks, let's go, pull him. No, I think he's going to be pretty decent, solid, you know, 13th, 14th best quarterback in football, something like that. So now where you get the main point here, the open comp for number 2, all right, the open competition is going to happen now, not necessarily during the season, because Russell Wilson is going to get all the reps there, and they don't practice nearly as much. But if Like, if it's Jameis, say if Jameis Winston wins the number two job based on how he plays in some of the games during the summer, well, where the hell is Jackson Dart getting any sort of preparation or any reps? He's not. That's what's tricky. And listen, if you're a Super Bowl team and, you know, your backup is at least instrumental, God forbid, like if you take a team like the Bills, you know, the Chiefs, teams that on paper, you know, Eagles have a real chance to win. Well, you want your number two to be an established vet who can kind of piece it together, at least, you know, get you to the playoffs if there's something catastrophic. You don't really need that here. Giants aren't going to the Super Bowl. Giants probably aren't going to even be a playoff team. Although I do think they'll be better than maybe some of you do, but this is not the year it's going to really pop for the Giants. I think most of us know that here. And if that's the case, the need for, you know, even though Jameis Winston's not really buttoned up, if you know what I mean, but for an established veteran, number two, is lessened. So if that's the case, why wouldn't you just have Jackson Dart be the number two? So he could at least get the other 15, 20, 25% of the snaps to get him ready to play. I think, this is just my opinion, I said this a couple of months ago, I love the guy, man. His personality's infectious. I think he's good for team morale. I'm not looking to get rid of him. I'm a Jameis Winston fan. I think he's going to get cut. That's my prediction. Watch, he'll wind up starting and he'll throw 31 touchdowns. And then Milton can call me and say that I was wrong. You happy, Mil? No, I don't understand how that would really work out in a way that's conducive to allow Dart to grow. Like, if he's the third stringer and he gets no snaps, then you don't even really know what you have going into year two, which is what I'm not looking to do. So Wilson's the starter, as he should be. I think by saying it's an open competition, I think a little deference, a little respect, and I get that as well. Dable, I think, played that well. Hey, it's open. We're not just going to hand it to the kid. Jameis has done some things in this league. Let's see how it shakes out. I think, and I hope, again, for the future of the Giants, that Dart wins the job. And then once he does, out of respect, you cut Winston and you let him go somewhere and actually be the backup. That's my read now. Unless Dart's a complete disaster, then that might change it, but I don't think he will be. I like him. 888-808-1019, BT and Sal on the Fan. Let me get Ian in New Jersey. What's going on, Ian? How you doing?
Hey, Brandon. Thanks for taking the call. No, you know, just the other guy, Milton, I guess. I'm not over here trying to defend Brandon Tierney. But when Milton was talking, it just, for some reason, it got something going inside me, a trigger, I guess. You know, people, what are you supposed to do? That's how you evaluate sports. You're allowed to have an opinion, and then new information comes in, and then your opinion changes. You know, it's kind of like, maybe it's a little bit of a hokey reference, but it is a little bit like the weather. You know, it's like we kind of know the weather, but things can change, and new information comes about. And also, you're not a fan. You're a sports talk show host. You're supposed to evaluate and just say what you think is going to happen.
Of course.
So when fans do this, it drives me crazy, because it's like, let the guy do his friggin' job, and that's it, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't bother me because I get it, and the pushback, and Milton's been calling for years, even going back to the old station. Thanks for the call there, Ian. But, so I like his aggression. I always find that, like, that's one of the things I enjoy the most. I don't mean battling with callers, but, you know, that give and take, that pull, that's what kind of sucked me in. I've said that, you know, Mike and Chris getting after callers with each other, like, the juice. I love it. I really do. I always love that. So I'm not trying to get rid of it. And I'm not trying to tell anybody what to do or how to think. But think about this, like the weather analogy. So my buddies text me, let's say today's what, Wednesday. Hey, you know, let's get out and play golf on Saturday, right? And let's just say, you know, go to the 10-day forecast as I usually do. You know, 99% chance thunderstorms, gusty winds, 20%. I'm going to write back, dude, weather looks awful. Nah, I'm not worth booking a tee time. Not going to happen, right? And then on Friday, the front completely blows out either to the ocean or a different part of the country. And now all of a sudden, it's nominal wind. It's partly sunny. It's not incredibly humid. Yo, let's play. Guess what? My opinion changed on whether or not we should play because the weather changed. To the Calder's point. Let me get David in Boca Raton. Want to touch on Volpe and Alvarez. two very important, interesting young players right now. What's going on, Dave? How are you?
What's up, BT? Listen, I've been listening to the station from day one, and I've only called like about 5-6 times, and I want to say you come across as such a good guy, man, that I wish you nothing but the best. Whatever you do in life, you really come across as a great guy, and I wish you nothing but the best. I wanted to start with that.
Thank you, man. Thank you, buddy.
So one of the things that makes me crazy, and listen, I know we have to talk about it every day, is we got to give these kids time. Now, I'm a Mets fan. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned yesterday robbing out Alan Trammell. When you get a chance, tell the audience how long it took them to have one good year. Just one. It took forever. And I know it's a different era, and I know Milwaukee can do it, and we can't do it, or that's what we're told. But Milwaukee has the best record in baseball, but they can do it, but we can't. Sometimes we got to be patient. And I don't know if Volpe's the guy or not. I don't know that, but I'll compare him to Alvarez.
Uh-huh.
Right now you have Spencer Jones, who's the new hot girl in the block, right? That's where he is. And I know you've known him longer than that, but in general, people, oh, no, we can't trade him unless we're getting a superstar. And I get that. It's tough to evaluate these guys. But when you look at Alvarez, he's younger than Spencer Jones.
I know.
And he's been in the league for 3 years. You got to give these guys time. I don't know if Alvarez is going to work out, but we got to give these guys time. And that's all it is with Volpe. I don't know if he's the guy. Maybe he's a second baseman. Maybe he's a backup infielder, which mm-hmm. is fine, too. Mm-hmm. You need that. But sometimes we just got to be patient.
Yeah, I've said that a lot, Dave. You know, problem is with the ticket prices, with the payrolls, with it's tricky to be patient. But one thing that and thank you for the call and thank you for the nice words. I definitely appreciate that, man. Like, I remember saying this, really, I mean, I've said it often, but specifically during the Isaiah Nick disaster. Right. And I'm like, guys, because one of the pushbacks is you can't rebuild in New York. And what I've always said is that's absolute nonsense. I don't want to hear that's not true. Because when you say that, you basically treat us, you know, like you're taking us as dummies and an inability to process things if it's going the right way. Like, I don't agree with that fundamentally. We will actually proactively, like from a Jets perspective, just do it right, man, for once. And we will get behind that. The thing that drove me nuts about the Knicks, and that's why I referenced the mid-2000s, Isaiah, Larry Brown after that 1 year. God almighty. The Dolan mess. My problem was is that there was no clear vision. There was no rebuild. It was, all right, let's take a flyer on an out-of-shape Eddie Curry. Let's give Jerome James 5 years, $30 million because he had one good series with Seattle in the playoffs with Seattle. You know, let's do all these dumb things to justify the ticket prices and try to just be okay rather than taking it on the chin, you know, willingly and stripping down, not taking it on the chin just because you suck, which is what they did anyway, but actually stripping it down, getting beat up, putting yourself in a position to get a top pick, and understanding, all right, it's going to be a little uncomfortable here. It just is, but we trust our vision, and more directly to my point, we trust our fans' ability to understand what we're doing. Like, remember when the Rangers sent, I forget what year it was, the Rangers sent their season ticket holders, I'm going to guess I could be off on this, 5 years, 6 years, whatever it may have been, something like that. Hey, they were told exactly what we're doing. I know somebody will tweet me the year. And you know, Ranger fans, what I'm talking about. You got the letter. They told you there was nothing to interpret. We're rebuilding. We're stripping down. We're going to do this the right way. Now, they haven't won the Cup since, and I know that they're obviously in an odd space now, but they could have won. They won the President's Cup. You know, so they got there. And their message to you, whatever, 5-6 years ago, it actually came to fruition. So you can rebuild, provided that it's done the right way. How you can't rebuild if you've got a payroll of $300 million. You can try to thread a needle and, like, you know, hold on to an Alvarez or hold on to a Beatty or hold on to a Jones or hold on to a, obviously, a Lombard. And, like, maybe half play it certain ways. But, yeah, I agree. I think the intelligence of fans and the ability to show some patience is vastly underrated, and it's been hijacked. I think you are okay with it, provided there's transparency. All right, BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019, coming up 3RQ, and we'll get back to the call. Susan Waldman coming up at 1. It's funny. You hear you grab all the Volpe in the dirt. You hear the groans. The left side of the end, you hear the groans behind Simpson's calls. I hear them. I know that you hear them, so we'll talk to Susan. And also, I want to get her thoughts on Jeter not going to Old Timers Day. We'll get into that as well. BT and Sal on the Fan.
A few hours ago, the head coach of the New York Giants, who has really created the art form of saying nothing, did actually say something. He did confirm what we all assumed, which was Russell Wilson, who is washed, is going to be the starting quarterback for the New York Football Giants. If you don't believe me, if you don't believe Rich Ackerman, who said it in the update, I take you back to Giant Camp a few hours ago when Brian Daboll, in the most Daboll way possible, made it official.
Can any of the other quarterbacks challenge Russell for the week one starting job, or is that door closed? That's his.
Yeah, like I said, these guys will be out here competing, but Russ is our starter.
Now, let me tell you something, man. I truly mean this because as I've sat here, lucky enough to sit here at WFAN for a very long time, and mostly this has been a conversation around the Jets, so this is kind of unique with the Giants. When a team drafts a quarterback in the first round or the second round, eventually that guy's going to get an opportunity. And I have been very consistent about this opinion going all the way back to the days with Joe in 2009 after the Jets drafted Mark Sanchez. So sometimes your opinions evolve on things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're pretty firm. And I am very firm on something. I want my young quarterback to sit. That's what I want. I wanted Mark Sanchez to sit. Did they listen? No. They had a Fugazi competition with Kellen Clemens, and Sanchez played right away. I wanted Geno Smith to sit. I wanted Daniel Jones to sit. And so in this case, I tell you right now, as an IFO, I want Jackson Dart to sit. I want him to sit the entire season. And I think the Giants are set up to do it. And I know that at times, even here in training camp, certainly when the season starts, there are going to be calls from listeners. There are going to be calls from guys here, maybe even you, Teague. I don't know how you feel. We'll get to it in a second. Who are going to say, Jackson Dart. I'm telling you right now, I think the Giants are doing the right thing. The question is, can they complete it? I think it is best for a young quarterback to sit. And so this is the beginning of this, but I hope all of us collectively can put the booze down and get through the next 4 or 5 months realizing that what's best for the Giants and what's best for this kid is for him to not play quarterback in 2025.
Jaden Daniels, CJ Stroud, was it best for them to sit?
Do you think Jackson Dart's either?
I don't know. I didn't think CJ Stroud was that good coming from Ohio State. But again, that's an Ohio State bias. Jackson Dart playing at Ole Miss? I don't know. How many of us have watched an Ole Miss game over the last couple of years?
But you know I can counter other guys who failed, right?
Dude, most of them fail.
Exactly.
Most of them fail.
Yes.
But so the reason I say this is because when we look at the evolution of the college quarterback, forget the guy that comes to the NFL, the college game has started to leak into the NFL. Like, the fact that we see quarterbacks, some of them running power plays, meaning pulling guards, you got a leading back, and the quarterback is running but off tackle, like that, you never saw that in the National Football League. The fact that most NFL teams, I mean, there's a handful that still occasionally get under center. Most NFL teams are taking the snap from the shotgun. And why do you do that? Because it gives you more time to process, and it makes it easier to identify, you know, what coverage is out there and where you're going with the ball quickly. And so the reason that you've seen some of these young quarterbacks come and make it in the NFL and succeed is because they're kind of miming what they did in college. Now, is that going to be the Giants this year with Jackson Dart? I don't know. I'm with you 100%. Jackson Dart should not play this year. Now, it could get to the point where the Giants are bad, and this is not because they suck or Russell Wilson is whatever. They just have a really tough schedule that it might become prudent to say, you know what, Jackson Dart, go get some time. The season's already lost. Go get some time. But that season is not going to be lost in the first 5, 6, 7, or 8 weeks.
Yeah, that's for well down the road.
100%.
And the only way you pull the trigger, in my opinion, of saying, all right, we're 2-11, we may as well, is if you think he's ready. Now, those are things we're not going to be able to see because we're not going to see him on the field to know if he's ready or not. I just think that there's a lot of reasons why quarterbacks drafted in the first round play right away. Sometimes it's what you said. They're better equipped to make that jump now than they were 15 years ago. I completely agree with that. But I think the other reason why quarterbacks play right away is there's a pressure to see them right away because there's a clock on how much time you have before you have to pay the guy.
Right. But it's really the fifth-year option.
Right.
Like you have to be able to decide by the end of their third year or going into their fourth year whether or not you're picking up the fifth-year option.
But I also don't think that's a good enough reason, in my opinion, to start a guy that quickly.
I agree.
And the other thing is most of these teams, and look, you brought up C.J. Stroud, you brought up Jaden Daniels. That's great. Did Bryce Young benefit from playing right away? Like, it didn't work for him.
No.
Now, he's turning his career around. Good for him.
Yeah.
But sometimes playing right away actually is detrimental. Yeah, how about Zach Wilson? Let's not bury him. Should he have played right away?
So we can pull out these specific examples. With Bryce Young, I almost feel bad because of the circumstances around Frank Reich. Frank Reich, who was fired from Indy, immediately takes another job. I mean, we talked about this with Rex, right? Rex gets fired from the Jets, immediately takes another job with the Patriots, and it's like maybe you should take a year. The same thing could happen. Who was the crazy eyed guy for the Jets? Why am I forgetting his name? Dolphins.
Adam Gase.
Adam Gase.
You called him the crazy eyed guy.
Gase gets fired from the Dolphins, immediately takes another job.
Right.
Like you're not processing why you failed. And so Bryce Young was in a horrible situation because Frank Reich wanted to win right away. Like Frank Reich needed to save his reputation as a coach, and so he threw Bryce Young into a situation that he wasn't ready for, and he almost crashed him out of the league. Now, thankfully, he started to stabilize a little bit in his third year now, but I think certain circumstances are ripe for young quarterbacks to succeed. It certainly was that way in Washington with Jaden Daniels, most of it because of Cliff Kingsbury and the fact that they had a really good defense. The same thing can be said about C.J. Stroud. Really, it was because of Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator, who had just taught two other young quarterbacks how to acclimate into the NFL. And they didn't have to play out in San Francisco, but he had taught them how to become NFL players, and it was easy doing it the third time. So if the circumstances are right, a young player at quarterback can thrive. And I think with the Giants, if God forbid, knock on wood, this doesn't happen, Russell Wilson gets hurt and training camp and Jackson Dart has to play, I think that this circumstance is actually set up for him to be successful.
Yeah, but first of all, knocking on wood, I don't want anyone to get hurt, but if Russ got hurt, Jackson Dart should still not play. It should just be Jameis Winston. It's a part of why signing Jameis Winston, in my opinion, was smart.
No, Jameis Winston was the, let's sign him now because we don't know if we're getting Russ.
No, but
and if we end up with three, then you know what, we'll figure that out down the road.
But you don't want to rush him. Like, think about 2 years ago with Zach Wilson when they decided, hey, let's reset this whole thing.
Zach Wilson didn't, he didn't compete for the job.
No, I know.
I think if Russ got hurt, Jackson Dart would still compete for the job. He would compete with James Winston. He would compete with Tommy DeVito. Right. He would compete for the job. Zach Wilson was handed the job.
No, it was a huge miss. Twice, by the way.
Twice.
The first time when they started him right away,
right.
And then the second time after Rodgers got hurt. Look at it this way. You know how sometimes in life you make a decision and you say, okay, what's the worst that can happen?
Mm-hmm.
You try to make that decision saying, all right, what's the worst case scenario? What's the best case scenario? If you take it extra slow with a young quarterback, what's the worst that could happen? There's really nothing.
You wait. You wait. He gets frustrated. He's not transferring. He's not going to another school.
Yeah.
So he just has to wait. It gets frustrating. You know who had to wait? And it's pretty damn good quarterback right now? Jordan Love.
Yes.
He had to wait.
He had to wait more than, trust me, Jackson Dart's ever going to have to wait.
Right.
Jackson Dart has to wait to me the way Patrick Mahomes waited.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's always the comparison, but it's a good one because what the Chiefs did was so perfect. They had this young, awesomely talented quarterback.
But they also had an infrastructure that was good. It was already established.
I understand that.
Offensively, defensively, good, really good head coach.
But Batik, that argument actually could have argues that Mahomes should have started right away. That they were so equipped with such a great head coach and all this talent that he would have been ready to start right away. And maybe he would have been, but the Chiefs took the slow approach because what's the worst that can happen if you take it extra slow with a young quarterback? And so far, your answer to me was, well, the kid will get frustrated. Why do we care about that?
You don't.
So then what's the worst that can happen if you take it extra slow with a young quarterback?
Nothing.
You waste time on the clock?
Yes.
Who cares?
But who cares?
If the guy's good, you're going to pay him.
I agree with you. The difference with Pat Mahomes is Alex Smith was there, and Alex Smith did nothing but win double digits and get to the postseason.
Right. So, you're right, and that's probably not going to happen in the Giants' case.
That's the luxury that the Giants don't have, and it's why the comparison doesn't work. It doesn't hold up because the Giants haven't had that consistent success or the quarterback who's winning you double-digit games for multiple years in a row.
This is why it's going to be more challenging. And it's not just challenging for Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. It's challenging for you. And I mean everybody out there. Because trust me, I get it. I get that when a football season starts, we are damn excited. I can't begin to tell you how pumped up I am for this Jets season. Mm-hmm. Aaron Glenn almost made me run through a wall earlier this morning when I was listening to his press conference. And then the audio crapped out. I don't know what the hell was going on. Then I got fired up again.
That's probably intentional.
You think so? Probably.
I'm just kidding.
I can't get over the fact that Aaron Glenn's wife calls Aaron Glenn AG. That's what I found out during Aaron Glenn's press conference.
Not honey?
No, AG.
Not baby?
AG.
Hey, big dog.
I want my wife to start calling me ER. But I understand how frustrating it is that when a football season starts and you're in the middle of it, you want this instant gratification. So if the Giants, and I'm not trying to give you some negative prediction to be a jerk, but let's say they're 2-8. Mm-hmm. Let's just say they have a very tough schedule. Okay, they're 2-8. There are going to be people, maybe you, Teak, I can't get in your head. Maybe Tommy can't get in his head. Maybe Sean. But certainly a lot of callers are going to say, hey, we're 2-8. Let's see Jackson. Let's see the kid. Let's see the kid. Let's see the kid. I spent a lot of money on season tickets. Let's see the kid. I sit there every day, 3 hours. I want to see the kid. And I get why you want that. It's a selfish thing. I want to see the kid. Mm-hmm. Why am I wasting my time watching Russell Wilson, who's a fossil, who isn't going to be here next year? I get that. The reason why the Giants have to show restraint is because they have an opportunity to do something that most teams don't do. Let a kid wait. Let a kid sit. And more times than not, when a kid sits and when a kid waits, they are so ready once they take over. Mm-hmm. And I can, you know, you can give me examples of guys who started right away and had success, and I can counter with guys who waited.
Of course.
But you know what else we can do? Tell me the guys who waited and then failed. Because there aren't many. Jimmy Garoppolo waited forever, and he became a damn good quarterback in
this
league.
But he also wasn't supposed to be a great quarterback in the league.
Fine, but he was also sitting behind Tom Brady.
Yes, of course.
Well, Jordan Love had to sit. Aaron mm-hmm. Rodgers had to sit. Like, there is a positive to doing this. I just think it's going to take a lot of restraint, not just from fans calling up Sports Talk Radio, but even from Brian Daboll, who loves him.
I'll tell you, ultimately, it's going to come down to what it looks like. What does Russell Wilson look like? And if Jackson Dart, whatever he looks like in the preseason, because that's the only time we're going to see
him. But that first part, I completely disagree with. What Russell Wilson looks like, why should that have any bearing on if the kid's ready or not?
Because if Russell Wilson is here for one reason. It's not to mentor Jackson Dart. Maybe that happens via osmosis. He's here to win football games.
Okay.
And if he is bad, like washed bad, mm-hmm. then he shouldn't be starting football games.
And then who should?
That's why he's here.
And then who should?
And then that's when it becomes the conversation around Jackson Dart or Jameis Winston.
Well, that's my point. Like, if the kid isn't ready or you think it's going to benefit him to sit, do not start him because Russell Wilson is washed. That would be a huge mistake.
By the way, you're not going to figure that out for at least a month and a half.
No, I know that. And we're going to have a tough time seeing it because it's all so behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not going to see him play. A lot of this is trusting this coaching staff, which I know there are a lot of Giant fans who don't trust this coaching staff. I get it. The record is the record. But the priority to me needs to be waiting. Because waiting is something that most teams don't do. It's something the Jets never did. It pissed me off to no end. When they had Teddy Bridgewater on this roster, and they had a chance to let Sam Darnold sit, and I loved Sam. I couldn't wait for them to draft him. Yeah. They traded Teddy Bridgewater and started Sam right away.
Because maybe Sam can handle it.
What, did
maybe.
He?
I mean.
Well, the results are the results, Teak. Did it work?
No.
Did it work for Zach?
No. But again, that's because the circumstance, the situation, the coaching staff, the offensive line, the skill position players, it wasn't right. So if it's right, that's when you have trust the young kid. If it's not right, you just can't because you put him in a bad spot.
So it's more the situation than the player?
Absolutely. I 100%
And you believe
that.
This situation is equipable?
No, it depends.
For
it depends.
Depends on what?
One, left tackle.
Well, Andrew Thomas better be healthy. That's for everybody.
Two, who's playing guard, either of the guards.
Right. And Evan Neal may be playing guard.
Exactly. So much of it depends on this offensive line. As optimistic as I think it feels over at Quest Diagnostic right now, defense looks great. Joe Shane did an amazing job populating the secondary, filling out the defensive line. We know what the identity is going to be. We know what the skill positions look like on offense. The same question still plagues this Giants team. what is the offensive line?
I'll tell you this right now, Teek. If the answer to that question turns out to be negative, whether it's health around Andrew Thomas, who's going to start the year on the PUP list, that's not a big deal. The Giants still expect him to be ready for the start of the season, yes. And he better be. Because I'd argue, and I'll include the Jets in this, I'll include the Jets, of all the football players in this town, the most important person in NFL world, in New York football, in determining the success of their team, the number one person is Andrew Thomas. I'd put him above Sauce as much as I love him. I'd put him above Quinnen Williams as important as he is. I'd put him up above Sexy Dexie. I'd certainly put him above the quarterbacks. No offense to Justin Fields or Russell Wilson, the Pittsburgh connection. Like, that's how important Andrew Thomas is. If you're telling me there's going to be a negative answer to the Giants' offensive line, that only furthers my point that you shouldn't see Jackson Dart this season.
Right.
Am I right?
Yeah, because he's going to get crushed.
And you can't risk that.
And he's going to develop bad habits simply because he doesn't trust what's in front of him.
Yeah, but Dable and Shane don't have the luxury of waiting. If they're 2-8, they're going to get fired if Dart doesn't see the field and show some promise. Teak, they can't go through another season where they win four or five games with Ross and Winston.
I don't think he needs to play 9 games for us to know.
5 or 6, though? I mean, you have to have like a month. Right. But my point
is... It's a bye week.
But
they have a late bye week.
But Evan's saying Dart's not going to see the field at all. Then they're going to the playoffs. Like, if they stink, if they get off to a bad start and Russ can't play, why would you go to Jameis Winston? That's not going to help you win games. The only way they keep their job, at least in my opinion, is if Jackson Dart shows he's got the goods.
They don't
have the luxury.
I'm not giving my opinion on July 23rd to keep Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. I'm giving you my football opinion.
Right, but
what they decide to do based on their job status is their call. My opinion is it benefits the Giants and it benefits this kid to not play this season. I get your point. Brian Daboll and Joe Shane aren't guaranteed 2026. Like, I get it. I understand it. And maybe they make a calculation in the middle of December. Wow, the only way to save my job is to play this guy. I, by the way, disagree with that point because I think it's easier to sell to John Mara.
Yeah.
Hey, we didn't even play the young quarterback yet. Wait till you see him as a reason to bring him back. But my opinion isn't based on them keeping their job. My opinion is based on what's best for him and the team.
Yeah, look, from a team standpoint, my gut is that they're going to be coached like they were in 2022. Don't try to be a hero. Yes, we're going to take shots when we can because of Malik Nabers and how good he is, but we want to win close games. And if we do that enough, we're going to have a good season.
We will get to your calls next, 888-808-1019.
So we just did this. This is cool. I remember filling this out. The Lord knows it took long enough to fill out. So we're doing this. It's a quarter century, WFAN quarter century team. And it's going to encompass all the sports and obviously the first 25 years of the century. And thanks to our sponsor, Cash App, for stepping in and having some fun with this as well. And, you know, and it just reinforces how pathetic it's been from a Jets. Now, the Giants' perspective has been tough lately, too. But I'm looking at this, and I can't even really argue much. So the way we did it, we were you know, sent this email. We went through all the different positions, like, hey, pick the top 4 wide receivers, pick the 2 best center fielders, pick the 2 best 2 guards, whatever. You know, Knicks, Nets, all the teams represented. And then they tallied up the results, and here we are. And I'm looking at the offense, right? And I really can't, I mean, from an emotional perspective, I can probably quibble a little bit. Like, I would put Krebet there, and I remember voting for Wayne. You know, but if you really think about it, Wayne's damage, like most of his statistical damage, was done in the 90s. Remember, he came up in 95, 96 with Kotite, and then played, you know, with Parcells and then Keyshawn, and he had 1,000 yards, and he was awesome. But, you know, once you got into 2000, which is what this is about, he kind of tailed off a little bit. So I say this because it's so giant heavy on the offensive end. And again, I can't really push back too much. Shout out to our guy, my guy, Tiki. Of course, Teak's going to make it. And Curtis Martin. Now, there's an argument. Like, who is better, Curtis or Tiki? But I'm looking at this, and there's 3 Jets out of the 11 that made it on offense. It's Curtis. It is Nick Mangold, terrific center. And, of course, big break over on the tackle, at one of the tackle spots. And you know, I look around. I'm like, all right, obviously Tiki's got to be there. Amani's there. Beckham's there. Plex is there. Victor Cruz is there. Shock, he's obviously the second tight end was Kevin Boss. It just shows you how many, you know, wasteland seasons we've had a tight end for both of these teams. But obviously, Shock, he was a horse. And then you got Deal, Chris Snee, O'Hara, And then Brick and Mangle round out the line. So 3 of 11 are Jets. And then I go to defense. And again, I think for the most part, it's done right. On defense, 4 of the 11 are Jets. Or if you want me to say it, Giant fans, if you're sensitive, 7 of the 11 are Giants. Now, the 4 Jets, though, would be Quinnen Williams, which I think makes sense. Mo Lewis. I don't know about that. And I could push back a little bit on that. Remember, Mo was up here in the 90s, too, doing a lot of damage. This is just from 2000 on. Darrell Revis. And is that it? Who am I missing? And Vilma. I could probably push back on that, too. But like, you just look everywhere. Justin Tuck, Dexter Lawrence, Michael Strahan, AP, you know, Antro Roll, Seahorn, you know, even the kicker and the coach go to the Giants. So it's a quarter century look at Jets and Giants football. If you guys want to check it out, again, thanks to our sponsor, Cash App. They jumped in. This is cool. We'll do this for all the sports. It's on Soch. It's everywhere. Go check it out. And just to jump in, you know, to another thing about the Jets here, football, oh boy, you know, I won't say I was surprised when we got the news about the contract. I was on vacation, but both contract announcements there with Sauce and with Garrett Wilson. Now, Garrett Wilson to me was a no-brainer. I do think last year, I was vacillating a little bit. I wasn't sure, like, because Sauce's indifference and or inability to tackle is a massive problem. Now, I think one thing that's going to be different, I think that Aaron Glenn's going to deploy him very differently. And, you know, if Aaron Glenn, who looked at every single snap of every single player, I'm not saying he's, you know, the main voice in, when it's that kind of money, but I'm sure they ran it by him. Hey, coach, what do you think? You know, you're a former corner, and I saw Aaron play, and Aaron was good, so I trust his instincts there. You know, you'd have to think that Aaron Glenn is going to say, all right, hey, number one receiver, go follow him. I don't know why Robert Saleh didn't do that. There's just certain things with certain coaches that are just so basic, especially with Saleh, that were just so dumb. Like, how the hell is Sauce Gardner not traveling with the main offensive target vertically for every opposing team? And he didn't do it. It's just crazy. So I think you'll be able to do some things with run support to help him out. And quite frankly, I think Aaron Glenn's going to get in his ass and make him learn how to tackle. So I don't want to get too in the weeds football. It's still July here. But just conceptually, I love what the Jets did here. But I had to be fair because there were points last year where Gardner really bothered me to the point where I was calling him Soft Gardner on the Unkillable Pod and on the air. You know, like he just had an aversion to tackling. It's, you know, it's one thing if you throw your shoulder pads in there and you're just not a great textbook tackler. But I mean, that's a problem in itself if you want to be the best in the game and the highest paid. But it's quite another thing when you just don't seem to really care to try to deliver a lick. And too much, he was soft. That's going to change, I trust. And, you know, just I would say bigger picture here. It's nice to have a little stability. You know, I get it. You could make the case, well, Garrett Wilson's a wide receiver. You know, Garrett, wide receiver's a dime a dozen. He's not 6'4". He's not like a Megatron game changer or something like that. I get it. You know, Sauce with the tackling. All right, I get it. But at some point, if you want to become a functional, respected, consistent organization with continuity, which, by the way, is how you get all the other aforementioned things there. You got to have continuity. If you start over every 2 years, you're just a disaster from a coaching perspective and from a personnel perspective. So this is really encouraging. I'm pumped up that this offseason has been very quiet for the Jets. It's refreshing. And I've also been honest enough to tell you that, you know, like an idiot, I took the cheese last year and I took the cheese the year before with Aaron Rodgers. You know, I took the cheese in the comeback and I took the cheese in the acquisition. And I took the cheese with, you know, all these, seven or eight primetime games. And, you know, finally we matter and people are going to pay attention to us. And I don't dislike Aaron like a lot of you do or some of you do. Actually, I like Aaron. I think the organization was so bad that they failed him and he got hurt, you know. But he's gone, so I'm not going to waste a lot of time on him. But it was fun to feel relevant, you know. And what I said when we talked about me and Sal before the schedules came out for this year, I'm like, just let me operate in anonymity. I don't want Sunday night. I don't want Thursday night. Don't give me Monday night. I don't even need, you know, 425 with Nance and Romo. Just bury me at 1 and let me just live my little tiny, for now, menial football existence and just see if Aaron Glenn is going to be the guy that I think he's going to be. No bold proclamations. Oh, we finally got the Super Bowl. Nobody wants to hear it. I don't want to say it. Nobody cares. We've all looked like fools a million ways sideways with these ridiculous opinions and convictions with the Jets. So I'm going to wait and see. But in my gut, I do feel like it's the right hire now. Because Robert Saleh, you know, looked like Tarzan, and he coached like Jane. Aaron Glenn looks a little bit like Tarzan, and you just know he ain't coaching like Jane. He's just not. Muji, yeah, I got to see. I'm optimistic, but I don't know. But Glenn just, he strikes me as, again, the right guy at the right time. And if they deliver these long-term commitments to two young players, one on each side of the ball, you know, Q's already got a deal. You know, we'll see if the old line's taking shape. I think they're going to commit to the run. I think they're going to be buttoned up. They're going to practice hard. They're going to hit. They're going to play with integrity. Like, that's at least a basic starting point. So I was pumped with the extensions. I've been very happy with the quiet nature to the offseason. And now it's, you know, this week, Wednesday. And obviously with the Giants this week as well. But now you'll start seeing the story. And this is where it gets fun. And I know that we kind of lean on this a little bit much, but we're jonesing for football. A little bit too much. But we're jonesing for football nuggets. You know, you start seeing the tweets. I remember even going back to Darnold and Zach and Rodgers. Oh, look at how he's doing 7-on-7s, touchdowns. Like, we will overreact to a player getting burned or a QB throwing a bad pick. We will. That's what we do. Because until there's real football, there's this stuff. Imaginary football, because training camp is a joke these days. And we'll lead it up and we'll react. But I got to tell you, just on a big, and I've said this before, so this is not a surprise, but since we're almost here, I'll say it again. On a big, broad, macro level assessment, anticipation, obviously hope. I mean, you're always hopeful, but rooted in a little bit more conviction than not, I think it's going to be an enjoyable season for both the Jets and the Giants. I do. I think we were very frustrated with Saleh and the softness with the Jets and the mess that they were. And obviously Daniel Jones, yeah, you got to move on. It's over. You know, and if the coach and the GM don't do well this year, then they're probably gone as well. But, you know, at least now you have Jackson Dart in the pipeline. So if Russell Wilson doesn't play well, you got some hope there. And we all love the DeVito story, but let's come on. He doesn't have that kind of talent where Dart does. And he could be a 10, 12, 13, 15-year quarterback for the Giants. Because one thing about the Giants, when they get it right, they usually get it right. For a while, you know, Phil was hurt early, but they got it right with Phil. They got it right with Eli. Jets aren't so lucky. I just feel both teams are going to be better this year. It could be a fun football season. And by fun, I mean competitive and a few more wins and maybe not dead by Halloween. 888-808-1019. BT and Sal on the fan. Let me get Timmy and Mayapak. Tim, what's going on?
Hey, BT. With the trade deadline coming up with the Yankees, I think they have too many missing pieces. I think it's a mistake to get Suarez in Arizona. He's got a smaller ballpark there. I don't know how many home runs he's going to hit Yankee Stadium. And I would bring up Lombard, get his feet wet at third base.
They're
he can't do a little
up.
Bit worse.
They're not calling him up. Timmy, I don't mean to cut you off, but you got to speak in reality. They're not calling up Lombard this year.
Yeah. Okay, but they're missing too many pieces. It's a mistake to get rid of Jones and delete your farm system for a team that's missing so many pieces.
Yeah.
So I disagree with that.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. The first thing you said was you don't want Suarez, okay? And he's an awful defender, strikes out a ton. And so I get you. I got to let you go. It's a little bit too much feedback. I was going to ask you, but I can't. It's too much. I'm torn with him. Because they can't not do anything at third base. Like, they have to do something. That's a given. And I don't know, maybe it becomes McMahon or something else there. But if you get Suarez, you are getting a very flawed player. What he's good at, he's really good at. What he's not good at, he's bad at. And what he's bad at usually buries you in October. Doesn't catch it, and he strikes out a ton. So that's a tough call. That's a tough call. Now, if you walk away with Merrill Kelly as well and the relief pitcher, I know that was out there, and you just do one big trade with the D-backs, and you don't have to give up, I mean, obviously not giving up Suarez, Spencer Jones or Lombard in that situation. I'm not saying I'm not amenable to it, but I don't think it solves everything. I really don't. So it's going to be a tough call. I don't know. Let me get Anthony in down in Tampa, BT and Sal on the Fan. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, BT, thank you for taking the call.
My pleasure.
Awesome. So first of all, I wanted to wonderfully said about David Wright. I'm a Mets fan. I know you're a Yankees fan, so I thought you said everything that needed to be said. Great job with that. But I did actually want to, about the Jets, the one thing that I'm hoping Aaron Glenn does better than anybody else is stop these stupid penalties.
Oh, God.
Because more often than not, how many times will we, you know, we had them pinned 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 12, and it's a stupid late hit on a quarterback or something like that. And if he could curb that, that's 3 or 4 wins right there, at least in my opinion.
Well, I don't know about 3 or 4, but it's a great starting point, Anthony, and I'm with you on that. Like, you know, the Jets just aren't good enough and have not been good enough to overcome the barrage of penalties that they subjected us to every single Sunday. I mean, this time you're watching 12, 13 penalties, 120 yards. What? Come on. With a pop gun offense? Yeah. They're going to overcome that. I think the Jets are going to run I think they're going to strive to run the ball 30 times a game this year. Now, there'll be games maybe a kickoff return, a fumble brought back to the house. You look up, it's football. It's going to even happen to a good team where they're down quickly 17-3, 17-0, 14-zip, 20-3, 21-0, 21-3, 24-3. That's going to happen. And when that happens, now you become very predictable. Then, you know, Justin Fields better runner than thrower. And then it's, you know, that's not a good situation for the Jets, really. But I think their defense is going to be really good. It's going to be good. I think it's going to have a chance to be really good. I think their O-line is going to be a lot better. I think there's going to be many fewer penalties. I think special teams will be better. People forget Aaron Glenn was a special team ace, man. He was good. So if they could, of the 17 games, if you can, they're going to have 2 or 3 duds right away. So, but if you could have, like, meaning out of the shoot, those sloppy one-sided scores that I just gave you where you have to abandon the run just to kind of get back in it. But of the, you know, 13 or 14 other games, like-ish, you're going to be able to run. And you're going to be able to run it, I would say, 22 times, roughly, conventionally, with running backs. And then, you know, 7 to 10 times a game with Justin Fields. 6 or so of the design variety. And, you know, 2, 3, 4, depending upon what's going on and who you're playing, weather, whatever, where he just tucks it and he makes people miss because he's a great athlete. He's a great runner. And, you know, when you do that, and you run the ball well, this is not breaking news, but the Jets have not done this forever, and it's such a boring watch. Like, but if you can do this, you know, crank out, hey, 1st and 10, Jets at their own 25. Yeah, run 5 yards. Oh, wow, what do you know, 2nd and 5. Now the entire playbook is open, and Fields can tuck and run. He could do an option. You could hit a tight end. What a concept, hit the tight end down the seam. You know, you could just do things. And I think that they're going to really do that. And I think it's going to lead to a much more competitive season. Let me get Eric in Massapequa, BT and Sound on the Fan. What's up, Eric?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
You know, I'm hearing a lot of people talking about, like, oh, I can't trade Jones, can't trade Jones. Why is no one talking about calling Jones up? Like, I don't understand.
I brought it,
like,
up. I said it.
No, I know you did, but, like, nobody else is saying it. It's everything I hear is, oh, we can't trade him. ESPN saying it. CBS. No one's
ESPN
talking
knows nothing about. ESPN knows absolutely nothing about baseball. ESPN.
They know nothing
baseball.
About sports now.
Lost.
They're a joke. That's a different topic. Anyway, but, like, this kid is absolutely killing it. He's currently the best hitter by a large margin in the minors. I don't understand why he's not up. You know, and that's leading to the whole not having a third baseman.
Hold on, let me ask you a question. Okay, now I think it's a little unconventional, a little bit early at this point. I did bring it up, so I don't think you're nuts. But if you bring him up, where's he playing? What are you doing?
See, I figured each Judge will DH one day, Jones plays.
Okay.
Belly goes to first base one day, Jones plays. Dominguez sits a day because for whatever reason, they love sitting him anyway, so they might as well get Jones in then. Have him DH a day. Like, they could find 4 or 5 days a week this kid's playing.
I don't know about 4 or 5. I mean, it's a little tough with Ben Rice and, you know, the Grisham and obviously Goldschmidt and Dominguez. 4 or 5 is a lot.
You know what? I'm not married to Goldschmidt. I love what he's done for us.
I agree with you.
I am more inclined to having Rice and him split time. Wells, I'm not sold on, so Rice can play a game or two behind the plate.
Mm-hmm.
They need a spark. And they're not, like, I'm watching them, you know, run the bases, get thrown out, throwing, you know, not turning easy double plays. They need a spark. This kid is killing it right now.
I know he is.
And he's doing the whole season. Like, I just, and obviously they need a third baseman. That's an entire other topic. Because Suarez, I like, he's a nice player, but he's also 34 years old.
Yep.
I've had him on, like, my fantasy team for years. Like, he's a very streaky player, and he's exactly what you said. He's exactly what you don't need in the playoffs. He's either going to strike out or hit a home run, and he can't field.
Well, Eric, that's why I'm trying to find somebody here that is going to bring something to the table if he has an 0-for-4 game. I hear you. I mean, guys, haven't we been? I'm not saying that I'll get on the air and protest vehemently if they get Suarez. I got to see what they give up. I got to see if other third basemen are indeed traded. If they're not, well, then maybe the Rockies just didn't give up on McMahon or whatever it might be, or Arenado, even though the Yankees don't want Arenado. Like, I'd have to read other situations, so I can't really tell you my reaction fully now. But I know he's a masher, and I know he's better than what's over there now. You have to upgrade, but, you know, you're going to get him for a couple of months here. He's basically his mid-30s, and he's a butcher at third. He whiffs all the time. He doesn't have great speed. So if he goes 0-for-4 with 2 punch-outs in October against Seattle or against the Astros or Toronto, what is he doing? He's doing nothing else of value. That's a problem. And we've seen that forever with the Yankees. So I'm trying to preemptively guard against that. If there's nobody else, of course I'll take him. Because he can hit bombs. And you might, you know, listen, he might be like Cespedes with the Mets in 2015. Even though Cespedes is a much better all-around player, it's not a great comparison. But I'm talking about just bringing a little juice with some thump. Now, Cespedes could run. He had a cannon. A different profile. Younger, much more dynamic. It's not apples to apples. But could he have an impact? Yeah, I mean, he can come here, he can hit the hell out of the baseball. Or he can hit 190 and strike out 26% of the time, which is pretty much what he does anyway. I don't know.
I saw a tweet that, you know, made me just think for a second, and we'll get into the reasoning for it. But I saw a tweet from FanDuel that at first got me excited a little bit thinking about it. Right now, there is no other team in the NFL has more bets placed on it to win the Super Bowl than your New York Giants, at least on FanDuel. The New York Giants are the most bet team to win the Super Bowl this season. The New York Giants, now, the most bet. Not the most money, the most bet. They are plus 23,000. Only the Cleveland Browns and the New Orleans Saints have better odds. The Titans are the same. The Jets are 22,000. And then you get a big jump up to 12,000 for the Carolina Panthers. So of all the bottom dwellers of the NFL, and mostly I do think that is mainly because of the New York Giants schedule. I would think that is I think the Giants are going to be a far better football team. Now, good enough to win a lot of games? I don't know. Good enough to win compete for a playoff spot? I certainly don't know. But I think watching the team, we will see a far, far better product than we have in the past. But no team has had more bets placed on it to win the Super Bowl. I'm assuming people just think that the 2,300 of the New York Giants is the best odds. Or, you know, the best chance to put $10 on to win, you know, $2,300. But I found that fascinating. I still wouldn't have guessed that. I still wouldn't have guessed today, as we sit presently, that no other team in the FanDuel Sportsbook would have more Super Bowl champion bets placed on them than the New York Giants. Let's go. Let's make some people some money, New York Giants. What the hell? And I am optimistic about the Giants. I don't know why. Maybe because I do believe in the coach, and I do think Russell Wilson gives him enough of quarterback play to actually make an offense work. I do think that Malik Nabers is a stud. I do think this passing game has a chance to be impactful. I think, you know, I've been hearing a lot about Hyatt and how much muscle he's put on without losing any speed. You know, Russell Wilson throws a great deep ball. Wandell Robinson can be shifty. I like the idea of him kind of really taking another step this season. Slayton knows the route tree as well as anyone. That's why they brought him back. He understands the offense. He can get down the field. He's been their leading receiver, you know, how many years running? Like, he's just been a positive for them. And then you get, you know, Tracy and Scadaboo. I think the skill positions are far better than it has been in a long time. Now, I know, obviously, Saquon Barkley was part of that. He's a better running back than what they have currently. But along with the wide receivers, I just like the skill group. As long as Andrew Thomas stays healthy, I think the offensive line can be better. And right now, defensively, I just think that they're going to, one, should be on paper one of the better pass rushers, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. They're getting more experienced. You know, Holland, added in free agency. I think both players can really make an impact. You know, Drew Phillips, you know, really played well last year. He's got some young pieces back there, getting a little bit more experience. You've added some veterans in free agency. You got Dexter Lawrence in the middle. The run game I worry about a little bit. We'll see about the linebacking core, but I do think they've done a pretty good job with this team, and I believe in the coach. As long as he has a quarterback, can at least have some offense. And I know the schedule is tough, but that can change real quick. Like, I get going on the road to start against Washington and Dallas isn't easy. You're coming home for a Kansas City game. Clearly, I know the Chiefs will be good, but, you know, the NFL changes year to year. There's no guarantee the teams who were good last year will be good this year. You have no idea who's going to stay healthy. You don't know, you know, if Washington is going to be this force yet again, just because they were last year, as great as, their quarterback is. I can't go into the season and say, oh, they have no chance because this team's better. This team, we'll see. And then the best part about it is there'll be no tanking at the very least, because no matter what happens, at least we'll get to see Jackson Dart and have an opportunity to see him develop with Brian Daboll and hopefully be at least something there and have something to look forward to and root to win every single game. That'd be nice. But no team in football has more bets placed upon it to win the Super Bowl than your New York Football Giants.